ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
ABC AFL Daily for your Tuesday. Corbin Middlemouse alongside Footscray Heartthrob, two-time All-Australian, the Coaches Association Captain of the Year,
chiseled cheekbones.
All of that. His name's Bob Murphy and he's with me in studio. Hello, Bob.
Hello, mate. Nice to be in your company, Corbin, as always on a Tuesday. I love this part of my weekly routine.
Yes. All the Monday night shows just to absorb the best bits and pull apart.
Salad dodges on Monday nights, all meat. Carnivorous Monday night footy talk.
I mentioned this yesterday's show, but I contend to you, Bob, that the AFL would have loved the events of Sunday. And you were at Docklands with everything that was going on with the Ark and getting called back. And I did the late game between North Melbourne and the Giants where there was the Griffin Logue touch.
Yes.
I thought people in AFL House would have been thinking, yes. Like there's, rather than the focus on, you know, the sacked KC and the issues of inclusion in the game, the Elijah Hollands investigation, mm-hmm. that it's kind of this, you know, these faux issues. This is more footy. It's between the white lines. It's kind of, you know, roll out the head of footy and just kind of bring the, after what had been a pretty dire weekend in terms of the on-field
grim.
Action.
It was grim.
There wasn't a lot of talking points. The average winning margin was 44 points. Mm-hmm. I actually wonder if it would have been one of the rare days where the AFL thought, you know what, we'll take this.
Perfect.
This is much better than what we dealt with last week.
Look, I'm a unashamedly romantic football follower. That's my love language with football. Having said that, I do have a theory that what really keeps us invested is our grievances with football and with the things around the game. So umpiring decisions, who didn't play well, how you were jilted. That's really what keeps buoyancy in the game. And then a bit of colour and romance is kind of what fleshes it out. So I think you might be onto something. Benny Cameron, I was sitting behind Benny Cameron when the play was called back after, what was it, 54 seconds or whatever it was. Look, I got a lot of amusement out of Ben's exasperation and frustration.
Antenna straight up. He knew this was the storyline for the week.
He knew it was quite a moment.
The footy show. So every Monday night, every network has a crack at it about what's happening in the footy landscape. There's lots of big opinions, lots of news stories. And Caroline Wilson had an exclusive off the top of Agenda Setters on Channel 7 concerning Ross Lyon and an apology that he handed out to his St Kilda players and the First Nations players at the football club.
The apology emanated from an incident at training on the eve of St Kilda's bye back at the start of April. A group of players, there was a chain of players, I guess, taking part in the drill, and at this particular moment, all three of the players were Indigenous. And Ross made the comment, "I love the brother-boy connection, but we all have to remember we are part of a bigger team here." This comment did not sit well with, certainly not with Brad Hill or Naziah Wanganeen Malira or any of the other Indigenous players who heard the comment. That was on Friday. On Saturday night, Brad Hill, who is probably the leader of St Kilda's Indigenous cohort, called Ross and communicated his displeasure to Ross Lyon.
So Ross provided a statement to the Agenda Setters on Channel 7, which reads as follows: "I'm not here to justify or try to rationalise what I said. We are only as good as our next moment, and it was a moment I understand I misjudged. Was I being flippant? Could it be described as casual racism? I learned a lot out of what happened. It didn't land where it should have landed, and I have to wear that, and I take full responsibility for what I said. I was very emotional at the meeting, and I offered to consider my position." Now, Caroline Wilson went on to say that Ross was almost relieved that they were going to report the story on Channel 7. We since saw reaction on Instagram from posts from First Nations players at the club, including Naziah Wanganeen Malira, Brad Hill, and Lance Collard, all showing their support for Ross Lyon with photos and words that match, basically, that they're in behind Ross Lyon.
It's a fascinating little microcosm of a story that obviously speaks to a big story in culture. So the context, if I'm going to weigh in on this, there's a few things that just need to be set pretty clearly. I'm a 43-year-old white male who was not present at the time. And if What was said was received as offence by those Indigenous players, then that is inarguable. Now, it sounds like in the aftermath that they talked it out and worked it out. What I would say is whenever there's stories of racism, so this is just purely from my point of view as the 43-year-old white male who can talk intellectually about this, but not, this is not a, you know, I'm not the minority that we're talking about here, is that there's, whenever there's racism talk, the way I view it is there's a gradient of, or a spectrum of it. So whenever it's, the language is racist or racism, that's on the sort of extreme angle of it. I do think sometimes we need to be a little bit more circumspect when there's moments of being culturally insensitive or just clumsy. Now, I don't know Ross Lyon all that well. I haven't spent a lot of time, and he and I are from different ends of the football spectrum, I would suspect. But from what I know of people who've worked with him, players who've played under him, Indigenous players, he has struck me as someone, in terms of coaching Indigenous players and the Indigenous players and the culture and the importance of that culture in footy, he's someone that I feel really quite aligned with whenever I've heard him speak about it, whenever I've seen him interact in this.
Mm.
So the way this story has gone so far, his the contrition, the sincere nature of his reaction to the hurt that he thought he caused, I believed it. And as much as it, in the moment, you're like, oh no, another racism story in footy, Bradley Hill sounds like he's going, that didn't fly, that you wouldn't have separated another group like that, didn't like it. So has the conversation with the coach. The coach gets up and says, mm-hmm. I got it wrong, I could have done it better, too flippant, not where I wanted it to come from, but lay myself bare. And I thought, you know what? That's a pretty bloody good thing, I think, for not just for footy, but for the way these things can be handled, where sometimes they're not handled like that.
Because there is a big power imbalance there. So the fact that he feels like he can speak to the coach and say, hey, we didn't like that. So that line of communication's open straight away. I did feel a little bit when I saw the Instagram post coming out last night. I thought, well, again, because of that power imbalance, what else are they going to say? You know, if you essentially want this story to go away, if you wanted to take it through a very cynical lens. But at the same time, I take them completely on face value because, well, that's their view, and I'm absolutely happy to take that on board. I guess the view that I took on it, or the lens that I took, was more from a media one. And I thought, who's motivated to get this story out there? So this happened at the start of April, and I thought, is it someone that's trying to damage Ross and do a hatchet job on him? And if you were trying to damage Ross, I'm surprised that you would go to Caroline Wilson, who is a former colleague of Ross Lyon and has been quite supportive of Ross in the past, and Nick Riewoldt sits on the same panel, who's as big a Ross disciple as there possibly is in the media. So unusual that you would go down that path if you're trying to damage Ross. So
also after a 100-point win.
So why else is the motivation there for this to come out? And so you think a little bit more deeply about it. Caro says, you know, Ross is almost relieved that it would come out. And then about whether that clears the air, for example, you've got the Instagram post coming from the First Nations players in the aftermath saying, hey, you know, we're fully supportive of Ross, almost as if, you know, everything's out there now, that we can all move forward together. We all know what it is, that the players have shown their support for Ross, that they're absolutely in behind him, almost as a way to mend it back together. So I'm not trying to suggest that, this has come from inside the tent or whatever it turns out to be, but I just... And I'll never ever know. But that's the nature of how these things work.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. But angle of it.
I'm just wondering who's motivated to have this out there in the public at this time in such a moment.
I would need some time to digest that. I would imagine if you were trying to hurt Ross, if that's what was part of this story, I would have thought there was opportunities. If you had the story in the weeks leading up to the weekend, there would have been better opportunities. But, I've spent more time just sort of digesting it just in the last 24 hours. But anyway, that's it's a couple of middle-aged white blokes kicking it around.
Yeah.
Obviously, a lot of other people have their opinion, more important people than you and I.
Mentioned the technology over the weekend, which was obviously a huge talking point out of the events of Sunday. So Greg Swan was moved, the head of footy, to come out and essentially try to clear up a couple of those issues. One of them, obviously, was deemed to be incorrect, which was Griffin Logue touching the ball, one that the Ark missed. The other one was technically right, according to Greg Swan, saying, hey, the ball was marked inside the field of play, so the Royal Marshal, he should have got a shot at goal, and ultimately he did, and obviously went back and kicked it. But they weren't happy by the fact that it took so long to actually get there, some 50-odd seconds, as we outlined off the top. Jared Whateley, this has been his thing, it must be said. He's been big on technology in the game and the use of the Arc. He was at it on AFL 360 last night on Fox Footy.
For a period of time, the AFL was investing in the development of a chip in the ball. That project is over. There will be no smart ball. That contract hasn't been renewed, and we're going to move to optical tracking and AI from here to try to find the best. But for a period of time, the answer was going to be the chip in the ball. Mm. That's not the answer. We know there was a better level of camera that the AFL deployed in the final series, and that's not there yesterday. But there was, and this is the idea, let's get them correct. We don't get them correct. Mm. Even when we think we should get them correct, we don't. This is the false premise of technology in sport, and every sport falls down the same path.
So do you want technology or not?
You either have to have the best available technology, which the AFL has never done in its system, or you can be the one sport to go, do you know what? We've seen it fail in sport after sport after sport.
What do you reckon, Bob?
I wonder if Noah had as much trouble with his arc as the AFL is currently having with its arc. I have a bent towards rub of the green. That's where I kind of lean to. That in the broader scheme of it, knowing that it will cause me and my team's pain, and you'll probably get a benefit at some point, that unless the technology can be absolute, you just have to accept. What is your appetite? What is your limits for a lack of absolute? You won't get 100% accuracy. So where is the line for you? Do you know the one thing that I don't think gets spoken about enough? Jared mentioned world sport there, and there are problems with this, you know, throughout world sport. None of them have a more problematic scoring structure than ours. Four posts, not all of them the same height, no net, one person adjudicating those four. I'm scared to pose this. I'm not going to offer this as a statement. Offer it as a question and then back away and put myself into hiding.
Beep, beep, beep.
What if you remove the point posts? We just got rid of points.
No.
Why not? just devil's advocate here.
It's a great thing that makes our game unique, where you do get basically rewarded.
Okay, well, that's all right. Well, then
you get rewarded for missing, basically. Like, there's no other sport in the world is there where that happens.
No, that's true. No, and I'm just posing it as a question.
Yeah.
But our scoring framework, like at its actual basic point being the proverbial, the point post and goal post being different heights, no net, is just going to be problematic forever and a day. So I even think if we're tracking with world sport, I don't think we'll ever catch up.
What if we made the point post the same size as the goal post?
Well, I think it's bonkers that we don't, really.
Okay, yep.
I mean, it would look weird. Don't get me wrong.
It would definitely look weird. Look like a game of Quidditch or something.
This is a version where I'm actually sat here right now watching myself criticising the same bloke, going, shut up, shut up. But it's a weird scoring system that we just sort of move past because, oh, we're so used to it, and that's just how it looks, and that's just how it's got to be. Difficult.
So we use technology in our everyday lives, right? So we don't all handwrite our notes anymore. We use computers. We do things like that, whatever it turns out to be.
Some of us are slower to get there than the rest, but yes, for the most part, we're on the tech.
But we know that there's there's things that will fall through the cracks, for example. Your grammar may not always be correct. There may be the odd spelling mistake, whatever happens or whatever. Mm-hmm. And you can have spell check and everything else, but it's not
there's
always...
There's three there's, you know, it's problematic.
It's not always foolproof, right?
So there, there.
Why is it when we use technology in sport, do we think that it needs to be 100%? So I always use the expression when it comes to, you know, we talk about these things, the perfect is the enemy of the good. So I actually think we never talk about the ones that we get right and that technology corrects and everything else. I think it is a much gooder system than what we have in the past than just trusting, you know, humans out there on the spot or whatever. It does correct more often than not. But every now and then you're going to get one that slips through the crack.
Yes.
And it's not going to be perfect and it's not going to be 100%. So unless you feel like it has to be, like, and you're coming from the point that it's, you know, if there's any error, it's a disgrace and everything else, then what's wrong with, hey, we get 80% right or whatever it turns out to be, or we get more right now than we did back in the day, and every now and then there's going to be one that's wrong, or it creates another issue, for example,
Corbin,
that
Corbin,
didn't previously
Corbin,
happen.
Corbin, far too logical for footy, mate. That is far too logical what you're pointing out there. Remember, go back to my initial point. This is actually what we are addicted to in football.
Yes.
We've got to be annoyed, mate. If we get an absolute, if we got it perfect, that would annoy us.
But I just, I've never ever been in the camp of, hey, if it's not 100%, throw it all out. Same with cricket and everything else. I think, look, it's much better than what we had before. But yeah, hey, it's not going to be 100%.
You want the howlers that don't affect, you know, those, you know, those big games. But you know, it'll probably happen.
No doubt. It was interesting.
We're keeping the point posts.
It was the point posts.
I want to go on record. I was just posing a hypothetical. I know it's dangerous territory in 2026. On the socials.
I did love that Greg Swan was quizzed yesterday about, so with the revision that they've made now, that basically the Rowan Marshall case, they wouldn't call that back in the future.
Mm-hmm.
It's only for goals and when the umpires on the field call for a score review. Very quickly, Mitch Cleary sort of clapped back at him and said, oh, well, what about the Ben Keys incident, which is why we've got the arc and everything else. That was called a point on the spot, but it was actually a goal. Mm-hmm. So that wouldn't be reviewed under this new revision. You could see Greg Swan think about it and go, yeah, no, that's about the case, and that sounds like what's going to happen. And then you could see him think about it sort of more and more as it went on, and it just occurred to him that, yeah, so if the umpire just has an absolute howler and gets it wrong, but he doesn't think he's wrong or he doesn't think it's even marginal, we won't know.
Usually the AFL, if they get that question, we'll take that offline.
Yeah. let's go. Where are we going next? Let's go back to AFL 360 and it's Coach's Night. So Matthew Nix was along after what had been an incredibly emotional couple of weeks. So first of all, obviously the passing of Jared Dawson, Jordan's brother. Then Jordan returned to the playing field on Sunday. And then this week coming up is the funeral of Jared's late brother. And Matthew Nix spoke a little bit about the emotion and what's been taking place at the Crows.
How did you and he decide whether playing was the right thing for him, never mind the team?
Oh, lengthy conversations over days and days, just to get a feel on where he's at. In the end, he's the one who makes the decision. We'll support whatever decision that is. We gave him right up until the wire. And as I said before, I think, you know, sometimes being able to get out on a footy field for these guys, it is a place where... You know, he actually mentioned it during the game. It was a place where he can just focus on footy, and it takes him away from, you know, what I've said right throughout is a really tough period for him. So, again, this week will be interesting. We'll have a celebration for Jared on Wednesday, and we'll get down there and support him and his family through that, and then we'll just, off the back of that, see where Jordan sits as far as, you know, the balance between football and life.
So they couldn't get out of there on Sunday from Brisbane, so they travelled home on Monday. Tuesday's a light training session. Wednesday is Jared's funeral in Robe, which is about an 8-hour drive out of Adelaide. Thursday, they've got the captain's run, and Friday night they play their biggest home and away game of the season against Port Adelaide. You've been in footy a long time, Bob. How do you handle weeks like this, or weeks where there is, you know, such very real personal tragedy that's happening inside a group? And then there's a game of footy where, you know, we clearly know where the priorities sit, and yet as a collective, you know, there is a job to be done somewhere at the end of the week.
Yeah, at the risk of just echoing Matthew Nix there, the Adelaide coach, I would sort of build on that in saying that grief, and there's many shades of it, as we all know, it will trickle or run along at its own pace for everyone, and you don't get to decide. That's a basic, you know, that's just my basic understanding of grief. So what Jordan Dawson is going through must be so incredibly painful. And even in his situation, there's an unknown of whether football is an escape and a balance to that, of just you got to do something and I've got to keep myself busy or whatever it is. And it gives a balance or some relief or escapism just from the pain that he's suffering. Taking that individual out of it for a moment. But players, as we all know, are just human beings that are dealing with all of life's potholes all the time, not just deaths or, and you know, I mean, this is a you know, the death of his brother in, you know, tragic circumstances, but relationship breakdowns, parents, ailing parents, all these sort of things. There's always the unknown of is playing or training or being at the club an escapism and a balance, or is it compounding the weight and the fatigue and just the limits of any individual? So there's always a bit of unknown. And I would just like to think as the game progresses and matures, it gets it better more often than it gets it the other way. But I just think it's gotten it pretty right for a long time would be my reflection of footy in terms of just dealing with grief. But knowing that there's the asterisk of the unknown, difficult for everyone. But as long as there's care, which of course there is, you just try and set it up to win, knowing that it may not.
I heard Nathan Buckley speak on the couch last night too, where he recalled the John McCarthy incident from his first year in charge, incredibly difficult scenario before a preliminary final. And he said, look, on retrospect, I wish I put footy more to one side. Like we tried to separate the personal and the professional as much as we could. But, if I had my time again, I would have done that differently. I mean, this is on a Wednesday and the game's on a Friday night. As a senior player, how would you go about it? Like, it feels like there's no right or wrong answer, is it?
Yeah, my instinct there is to sort of almost ache for Nathan Buckley that he's still thought about that and thinking that he made the wrong call. That there is no right or wrong. As long as you're approaching it from a place of tenderness and balance, I think we give people a bit of grace.
Just another serious issue is obviously the investigation into the Carlton Football Club, where it is at an interesting stage that the Blues have spent over a week with their report. They handed over to the AFL last Thursday night, so almost exactly 7 days on from the episode with Elijah Hollands on field. The report on Footy Classified last night on Channel 9 was that a few questions were still being asked by the AFL back to Carlton, essentially saying, hey, is there some more information around a few of these issues? The conversation unfolded and Matthew Lloyd had this to say about the entire process.
I agree with Jimmy. I think it should be an external person do this, because the honesty is not going to come to someone at Carlton. The honesty will come to someone outside of Carlton, where you can sit back and give exactly what you think of how it was handled, whether it be the 22 players that were there, staff members who were there, everyone, the club doctors, the physios, the integrity officer, the welfare person, everyone who can talk openly and honestly. But I just wonder whether this will be an outcome that needs to suit Carlton, that needs to suit the AFL.
Sorry, you're worried it's going to be a negotiated outcome?
An outcome that makes everyone in the game look better out of this situation, where I think that the player was let down in this situation.
So there's a reason why we have a bit of suspicion around that. I mean, the Christian Petrarca case, where we never really got answers, and then this report sort of came through, which was reported on last week with a few recommendations or whatever, but it didn't feel like there was a satisfactory answer out there for the average footy fan as to how something like that was able to unfold, and a guy that had, you know, catastrophic internal injuries is able to be put back out on the ground. And this is a mental health issue, which we know about, and so there's always a curtain when it comes to mental health. But is it important that there is some aspect of this that is, and as much as we empathise with Elijah, given how publicly it played out, isn't there an obligation for the game that we do get some answers for the greater good as to how this is able to happen, that a player in a seemingly vulnerable position is out there on the field for 72 minutes?
Yeah, you would want the investigation to have a level of rigour to it. You know, you would want it to be thoroughly investigated. You'd like to think Carlton would do that. of course, there would be rightfully query on any footy club, I think, because of the nature of, you know, protect your own and not throw people under the bus. So the AFL, so now we've got this hybrid model, don't we, of the AFL kind of as an external, but they don't really want this story going on any further and being dragged through weeks and weeks of headlines. And so having said all of that, it's such a rare occurrence and incident that does the game need to add some sort of litigious arm or have an external company? I don't even know if that sort of thing exists.
Yeah.
You know, that's where I'm coming from. Like, does that sort of service exist where someone can come in or a group of people come in and go, well, actually, this is how we'll handle it? I mean, I know they do it for footy department reviews that always end up in the coach getting sacked.
Yeah.
So does it deserve that level of vigour? Maybe.
We always joke in the cricket season that you want to be the person commissioning the review. You don't want to be the person who the review's commissioned about. Like, it's, you need to get in first and say, you know what, we should commission a review. And ordinarily that ends well for like the people
those independent reviews in footy clubs have about a 93% strike rate of...
Yeah.
But go and investigate our club. Mm. These are the people we want to move on.
Yeah.
Can you do it for us?
Work backwards.
Can you tell us what we already know?
Happens a lot in the business world too, doesn't it? This is the outcome. We need a report that somehow suggests that's the right recommendation. I think there's a way we can do it, can't we? Without and again, it's easy for me to say, I'm the sports guy on the radio that, you know, doesn't know all the facts and everything else. But I think there's a way that without delving into the player's medical history and how it all came about or whatever it turns out to be, to say, hey, when the player arrived at the ground to when the game ended and that he was out there across four quarters for 72 minutes, this is how and why it was allowed to happen. And I just, the thing that sort of makes us so cynical, I think, and when it comes to, you know, when players do have, you know, genuine mental health issues and everything else, where there's this cynicism from the football public and from the press, that there isn't in moments like this where there should be some level of culpability that given for an event that played out so publicly. It's often, you know, tied up in, you know, in legalities, and we're worried about, you know, all the rest of it. And you think, hey, what about the Spike Lee film? You know, just do the right thing. Tell the average person out there, you know, this is what happened. So if they're planning to put their kids into AusKick or whatever it turns out to be, or junior footy, they can feel comfortable enough that, hey, that the game's going to look out for them going forward.
Well, Laura Kane is one of the sharpest minds that I've ever seen in the game. Legal background, knows footy. So eventually it will get to her desk.
Mm-hmm.
A simple way of reviewing anything, and we'll review this podcast after we've, you know, stopped the record, of if we had our time again, what would we do differently?
Mm.
So whilst there's a lot of critiquing from afar, from people like you and I, of what Carlton should have done or what they didn't do enough of, those sort of things. But I also think there is a layer of empathy of going, well, the game hasn't seen a lot of this. So I can understand that, you know, maybe there were some, they didn't get it absolutely perfect. So as long as there's some, you know, there's balance to it of, this is how things have been done. As an industry standard henceforth, this is what now will happen. So if we get that, it'll tell the story, whether we do or not.
I feel like we lived through this a little bit, even different scenario, but with the Essendon thing too, where I actually felt like people in the footy public are pretty understanding, and same in the press, that if people put their hand up and say, hey, we made errors, we didn't know this, we didn't know that, a lot of people will go, hey, I understand, I'm not going to give you 100% of the blame. But when people, it feels like, aren't taking responsibility, then it feels like it's like, well, hang on, we've got a role to play here to hold people to account.
We actually are all good. It's actually... you guys have the problem. Like, come on now.
Yeah, and then it starts to... I actually feel like if there was a little more, hey, you know, it wasn't perfect, but we didn't know this, we didn't know that, I think people would be pretty forgiving.
And look, it's Carlton on this one. Every club gets their go at it.
Let's do a bit of footy to finish. Back to the agenda setters on Channel 7 and Kane Corns. Always the contrarian. Just as everyone's hyping up the oldest player to collect that many disposals in a game and record-breaking feats of Scott Pendlebury, just as we're all zigging one way, Kane zags the other.
Well, I'm not sure when at Collingwood it became about the individual and not about the team. Scott Pendlebury should be playing this week against Hawthorn. They need him to be playing this week against Hawthorn, but the reason he's not playing against Hawthorn this week when they desperately need him is because they cooked him. They absolutely cooked him because he was chasing a disposal and an Anzac Day medal record that we all loved and we all celebrated. Congratulations to him. But this is about the team. And Collingwood's next 3 weeks, Hawthorn, Geelong and Sydney, Pendlebury's going to be playing in one of those games. They've beaten St Kilda, Giants, Carlton and Essendon. They've beaten no one. He just should be playing this week. They desperately need him against this Hawthorn side, but he's not, because he spent 5 minutes total on the bench in the second half.
But the game was still alive at half-time. Like, it wasn't like it was...
They were 43 points up at three-quarter time. He's 38 years old. He should have played with this game in control at half-time, certainly at three-quarter time, 5 minutes of the last quarter. He spent the most time on the ground other than Nick Dacos as a midfielder in the last quarter. He spent 2 minutes just over on the bench in the last quarter at that age. When has he ever done that?
Played 92% in Q4, spent only, I think, 5 minutes in the second half off the ground.
Look, I've got to explain a little bit of my relationship with Kane in the media.
Yep.
One thing I think that gets missed, mm-hmm. not by me, his ability to survey the landscape and press the button just to get outrage is quite phenomenal. This one reminds me. So for the it's not that there's not a kernel of truth in there. The numbers and the stats will be like, oh, okay, it is a bit different. And there's something quite joyless about it as well. Like when everyone's celebrating this just incredible, wonderful player at the peak of his powers at such a late age. Like, there's just so much to love about that story, and then Kane does a zag. It does remind me of the other time when Jack Revolt ran back with the flight and took one of the great marks, not Nick, Jack, when he went back and got the... And then Kane immediately went, they should trade him. Richmond should trade Jack Revolt. And I just remember thinking, Kane, that one I saw. I was like, I know what you're doing. And this one I feel like, again, like, Kane, I know what you're doing. I know what you're doing. Most of the time... I think genuinely most of the time, Kane is 100% all in on... I reckon this one was an 80-20. An 80-20, I feel like he's like, oh, there's enough of me to go, I could convince myself that they made a bad call here.
So there's two arguments here. The one is whether they should be strategically trying to place where he breaks the record. And there's some people in footy that feel like absolutely they should. It's a milestone that... Yeah, yes, we saw Brent Harvey do it in the not-too-distant past, but we could go many, many years until we see this record broken again. Michael Tuck held it for 30 years or whatever it turned out to be before.
Poor old Boomer barely had it for a fortnight. Had to give it up.
but about whether he should be missing games that Collingwood need to win. And then there's also the conversation about how much footy he actually played on the weekend. I guess my counterpoint to it would be, if they knew he wasn't going to play off a five-day break anyway, he may as well play 100% of the game time, because if he doesn't need to back up the next week. So it's almost the chicken and the egg thing here.
Pre-planned.
Yeah, where you go, well, if they know he's not going to play 5 days, of course he's going to play 92% in the last quarter, because he's got 2 weeks to recover. He's got plenty of time.
And that's the structural side of it. I would also say the malleable part of it would be conversation during game. How are you going? How you're tracking? He's like, never felt better.
Yeah.
Couldn't be feeling any better. Or, putting words in Scott Pendlebury's mouth.
Haven't been tackled. Haven't seen an Essendon player in my vicinity.
And they said, how are you going, Scott? How do you're watching. How do you think I'm going?
Yeah.
running on top of the ground. Yeah. But I love Kane for that. I love his 80-20s. But I see him. I see you, Kane.
What do you reckon about whether... So say he misses this week, which he's going to, against Hawthorn. Then he's going to equal the record against Geelong. Mm-hmm. Then they play Sydney off a six-day break. Should he miss again and essentially play one game in 3 weeks to make sure he breaks it back at home at the MCG against the Eagles? Or should they send him to Sydney to break the all-time games
record? Well, they've got an out with the day break situation.
So 6 days and travel, not enough at 38.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, he seems to be coping with the demands of the game.
Should he play next year?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Before we go, how was your reunion?
It was, reunions. So it's been a double. We had a players and staff informal at the game, watch the game, drinks and something to eat. And it was, it was just a reminder of just the amount of beautiful people. And there was something really gentle about the night, which... Footy clubs, a lot of complex relationships, A lot of people don't leave clubs the way they want to leave. So there's always a lot going on, especially, you know, 10 years of... And it was just everyone brought the best version of themselves, and it was just such a reminder of just how many beautiful people were at the club at that time, just happened to get a trophy at the end of it, too, actually, with the VFL as well. And then we had a more formal one last night, and it was, again, with 600 supporters. And, I mean, I describe footy clubs, they're like circles within circles. You know, you got the players, and then you got the coaches and the support staff and the volunteers and the support, and just keeps going round and round. Mm. And just to be in that room last night, very intimate, 650 people. It was good. It was just nice to
so
be.
So everyone's invited, the whole crew.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think so.
Awesome.
It was a good night. Good.
Where's the medal, by the way?
It's in the museum.
In the museum. Gotcha. So what you gave it back, didn't you, pretty early on?
So you've missed the point as well. You've missed the whole point here. It's not about the medal, mate.
Correct. No, I understand what
you're saying.
It's
not about the medal. It's about the hug.
I would argue in more recent years, though, this has become more and more commonplace. So since, obviously, this was, we hadn't seen it all that often until, obviously, Luke Beveridge did it with you. But if I was you in recent years, I'd be saying, hey, may as well go and get the medal. Fagan did it the last 2 years, didn't he? Because the coach gets essentially the premiership medallion as well as the Jock McHale medal.
Yeah.
And I think he gave one to Oscar McInerney and gave one last year to Jared Berry.
Right,
so guys that had played in similar scenarios. But, it's become... You started to think.
You wanted an exclusive?
Started to think.
There was a 3-minute period on that grand final day in 2016 where Bevo gives the Jock McHale medal. Jason Johannesson had to go and do an interview, and he said, can you hold this? I had the Norm Smith and the Jock McHale. I did have a moment thinking, didn't even have to put my boots on.
That's a great note to go out on. Appreciate your time as always, Bob. I'll catch you next Tuesday.
See you there.
This has been ABC AFL Daily, your home for footy conversation, 5 episodes a week right here.